Thank you very much, Lynn. I really appreciate that very much. Yes, I'm Diane Firebearer, a friend of Roger F.'s, who's a Nicotine Anonymous co-founder. By the grace of my higher power, rather than smoking more than 28,000 cigarettes, I've been gratefully recovering from nicotine addiction for 1,285 days in a row. That's 3 years, 6 months, and change. It really does get better. I quit on January 14, 2008 at 5 a.m. It's all about change. You have to have faith, my first sponsor told me as I prepared for this quit. The program is all about faith, experience, and hope, he continues to tell me. What faith do you have now that you didn't have then, he asked me last night as I was mulling over what to say in this speaker share. Faith, for me, is generally about things I believe exist. I believe that higher power exists. Faith in this quit has been often about things I believe do not exist. Need for nicotine does not exist. Faith in my recovery is a mixed bag. I have a lifetime of beliefs that were built up during my career as an addict, and I know, as sure as I know that I don't need cigarettes, that there have got to be a lot of doozies in that bag, a lot of what in the name of all that is good, what was I thinking type beliefs. On the does not exist side of the equation, love from someone who does not love themselves is right up there at the top. That doesn't just mean that I truly need to let go of any idea that someone who can't feel love can give it to me. It also means that I can't give it if I don't have it for myself. I am coming to believe that unless I can love myself, I can't truly know my higher power's will for me in my life. My higher power knows that things that may give me tremendous, sometimes excruciating pain can be part of what's best for me in the view of the highest good. Pain like the cravings for nicotine when I first put it down. There's not much in my life I can point to and say that I have hurt worse than I did than I did in my early quit. It felt like every fiber of every level of my being was on fire with pain and fear from those cravings and the enormity of living without nicotine for the rest of my life. Fortunately for me, I found antidotes to that pain and that fear, and they were totally about having faith in my higher power. The antidote to the pain of the cravings was a bitter pill, but as I stopped clenching up against it, it went away. The only cure for a nicotine craving is not taking nicotine. Because I finally came to believe that and acted on that faith, I got through the pain that sometimes felt like it would never go away. Faith brought me here, and here I learned and keep learning that to end that fear of a permanent quit, I have to keep my recovery in today. When I'm living for today, right now, this moment, the unbearable weight of the rest of my life disappears. In its place, I've begun to open my heart to the best this moment has to offer, and I'm continually astounded by how good that can be, and how unexpected the quality experiences can be if I have faith that my higher power can give me great contentment and fulfillment if I'll just keep myself open to their delivery. I find with this and with many things in my life that if I consciously reinforce my desire to have the good experiences and then take the time to share them and or write them down when I receive them, my appreciation attracts more good stuff. What was your favorite part of the day? Has become one of the things I like best to ask and be asked. Sometimes I have to rummage around for an answer, but the more I play this game, the easier it is to find not just one, but a small handful of great things I enjoyed. If I take the time to think about some of the details of those daily highlights, that itself seems to encourage me to have faith each day when I get out of bed that I will in fact experience positive things that give me contentment, fulfillment, and even laughter. Being in a place where I'm actively looking for good food for my mind, heart, and spirit also means that I'm focused on discovering and living the solutions I find in our program rather than getting stuck in a kvetching ditch every day about what I thought went wrong, or worse, what might go wrong. Stinking thinking like that is a trapdoor to losing my quit, and I want nothing to do with it. Even in the midst of something that objectively looks rotten, like sitting for hours in an emergency room and then an intermediate care hospital room when my mother had a stroke last weekend. If I have my compass pointed toward healthy, enriching experiences, I'm able to be more present to the serious needs of the moment because I'm not cringing in fear that things are bad and can very easily get much worse. Rather than glomming on to the stressors, by making the choice that I can have a good day, even during a crisis, I'm much better able to see answers to problems and take a direct and gentle route to applying those solutions in a matter-of-fact way as simply being the next right thing to do. That next right thing is never, ever, never getting a nicotine fix. 4 years ago last week, my partner of the time lost his mother to a stroke. While the onset of the stroke was swift, her death was not, and the family went into full-time vigil mode for some time. Although I was my partner's primary support person, I knew none of his relatives. When I was in the room during the final agonizing 24-plus hours, I tried to be calm, centered, and focused, but that was next to impossible. Nicotine cravings racked every single minute I was in the room because the smoking area was a very long walk away from there. So by the time I got back from my latest smoke, nearly 20 minutes had already gone past, and so I was in the clutches of a wicked craving before I ever took my seat among the family again. I was gone so long on one of my nicotine treks. My partner called my home phone and pleaded with me to come back there and be there for him. When all was said and done and I heard the message, I was mortified that because of my addiction, my partner had felt abandoned at the very time when I was trying to be there for him 100%. I couldn't be there for anyone 100% when I was smoking, and that included me. So much of my time during my smoking career was spent getting my fix, taking my fix, and then spending most of the time till the next fix craving it, that even such profound things as death had trouble getting elbow room in my life. In my delusion, however, while my partner's mother lay dying and I sat out in my car smoking up a storm, I told myself that I was actively doing positive things like giving myself a chance to think and taking time to get perspective and letting the family have a break from me. While I indeed needed to be doing those things, I was going about it in all the wrong way, and when my own mother lay in the hospital after a stroke last weekend, the contrast in my behavior was stark. While I needed to get away to think and get perspective, I could just go down the hall to the family room where I could sit and watch the sky or the TV as I felt so moved. If I wanted the exercise of following the maze out of the hospital, not one millisecond of that walk and the period of rest at the other end were spent thinking about anything at all to do with nicotine, except occasionally the fact that I wasn't craving any. As I sat enjoying the beautiful summer days and nights, my thoughts about my mother's situation weren't muddled up with dual anxiety of simultaneously knowing that my cigarette was disappearing by the breathful and that no matter how hard I smoked, sucked on that tube of tobacco, I simply wasn't ever going to get as much nicotine as I thought I needed. Instead, I was able to be truly meditative, if that's what seemed like the thing to do, or be completely engrossed in the beauty of the sunset over the city skyline, or just sit and let music wash over me from the car stereo. And when I was with my mother, I felt at home in my chair, my mind clear to hear what the doctors and nurses were saying, without constantly worrying if I was going to, quote-unquote, have to go smoke at an inopportune time. At the end of the day, when I got back here, I was able to head for bed and a healing sleep. I was not driven by an insatiable craving for nicotine to sit up chain-smoking cigarettes or inhaling cigar smoke until I overdosed and upchucked. Now, this is to say that I sat by my mother's bedside in a state of meditative nirvana. Of course not. But when heavy emotions came up for me, how long or deeply or clearly I was able to face them and work through them was not dictated by my nicotine blood level. It was driven by the tools for healthier, saner living I've been picking up a little bit at a time as I work this program, interact with the fellowship, and commune with my higher power. Did this mean that all of my coping mechanisms had a clean bill of health? No, but at least self-medicating with poisonous nicotine wasn't among them. neither was hiding inside a cloud of smoke or smoking at my mother in an insane, see what you made me do sort of way. Yes, there were times when I was very anxious about what was going on. When my partner's mother was dying 4 years ago, using nicotine in place of a proper prescription gave me the illusion that I was taking care of that fear. In fact, the stew of chemicals had my nervous system going off in all sorts of directions, with calm being a fleeting slot on the roulette wheel. When my mother lay in her own bed up there on the hill, I was able to drink water, deep breathe, take as long or short of a stroll as seemed necessary, and, only as prescribed, take medicine my doctor had given me for the sole purpose of relieving unbearable stress. Yes, there were times when I wanted to hide from the reality unfolding in front of me. When I was trying to be there for my partner, I spent a lot of time running back and forth, and very little time, actually, in secluded privacy, where I could be alone with any inner turmoil, or simply let my guard completely down and just lie back in my driver's seat and be an uninhibited me for a while. Last weekend, if things became too overwhelming and I retreated to a cone of privacy, I was totally inside that quiet, me space, and since I could focus on getting what I needed out of the solitude rather than what I thought I needed and was not getting from a smoke, it took less time to recharge my batteries and return to dealing with my mother's needs. Yes, there were a great many negative feelings I had to process. Since nicotine utterly and completely kept me from being able to be fully present to those feelings and the heavy feelings of my partner's family while his mother was dying, I missed so many social cues, it was a wonder his family didn't chuck me out of my ear for being insensitive and or oblivious. As I watched my mother lying in bed after her stroke, there was no craving call that played interference with my ability to work through bits and pieces of grief, anger, and loss I felt in my relationship with her throughout my life. During my smoking days, this week since my mother was released, would have been spent spewing vitriol about all the things she did that quote-unquote made me get so angry that I was quote-unquote forced to smoke twice as much as usual. I would have stayed stuck not just in the experience of being her sole family support person, but in all of the negative scenes that face-to-face time with her had dredged up from the rest of my life with her. I wouldn't have really been looking for relief from any of this so much as people to buy into the grand hoax and agree with me that she, her health, and her history with me are problems worth smoking over. As they say, quote-unquote, stuff happens. There isn't a reason good enough to pick up. Today, as I slowly regain my status as a non-smoker, I can see and admit that she has changed since the last time I went through an emergency room visit with her a year ago. My mother, that is. And I can see that our dynamic has changed, in part, because I go to God looking for answers, where oftentimes in the past, I went to the tobacco shop. And as the camel pack I saw yesterday read, Surgeon General's warning, cigarette smoke contains carbon monoxide. Higher powers warning, nicotine contains no hope, no faith, no strength, no solutions. Nicotine can't replace love, a deep breath filled with the sense of summer, or the embrace of someone I lose to the grave, to divorce, to addiction, or to move across the country. For more than 3 decades, I spent my life sucking down nicotine, thinking that it was some sort of cure-all and that it would fill voids in my life from a dysfunctional childhood and then dysfunctional adult relationships. Cigarettes are not my friends, and they are not replacements for failed parenting or partnering. Nicotine addiction is like a lying, cheating, thieving, very abusive partner, always taking, always controlling. As an adult child of an alcoholic and survivor of incest, my compass got way out of whack as I grew up. I learned that abuse was an expression of love, when of course it was not. I learned that mommy disappeared in a haze of alcohol and drugs, and daddy could be a direct threat to every aspect of my well-being and even my life. I didn't get anything approaching the love I needed, and as a close recovery friend put it so powerfully this week, I confused my longing for love itself. Every time I sucked on a cigarette, I was trying in my adult addict's way to fill that void and meet that need for love. Nicotine didn't fill the void of the love or even the craving for the nicotine. The cycle of intense, excruciating longing it created in my life took up huge amounts of room in my inner self and poisoned everything it touched. The familiar sense of never getting my needs met left me feeling so much longing, I lost track of the fact that every hit of nicotine I took was making the situation worse. I don't feel physical cravings for nicotine anymore, but I do still feel urges to smoke, sometimes strong ones. Now when I have those feelings, I know that something is amiss, or just plain missing, and instead of distracting myself from the problem with a nicotine fix that can never be big enough, my first thoughts are of trying to identify what's causing the urge and what I can do to address the real problem, not just symptoms. I am deeply grateful to 12-step recovery work for this dramatic healing I've already had as a result of working the programs. When one of these smoking urges comes over me, I have a first aid kit that just keeps getting filled with more good medicine all the time. One of the countless souls turn to in times of need is the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Change is the key, but I can change all sorts of things, not necessarily for the better. So how can I deal with creating change? As our A Year of Miracles Daily Reader explains, which is on page 139, I ask for the wisdom to know the difference between what to accept and what to change. So far, I've collected two questions to help me figure out the answer to that. Is this good for my recovery? And will this help me grow? I thank all of you in this fellowship who have shared your experience, strength, hope, and faith with me to help me achieve this recovery and growth, and I thank my higher power for bringing such wonderful agents of change into my life. Thank you, and go ahead.